The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
Thanks, Eamon. It's Newstalk. Mark Agnew here. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by another Mark. Great name, that. Mr. Mark Maxwell. And it's going to be very interesting to talk to him in these challenging times in education, partly because he's a guidance counsellor, but also because he's been on a fascinating life journey of his own, which includes living with sudden death syndrome, which sounds like a contradiction in terms, but he will explain all. Mark Maxwell, you're very welcome to the programme. Thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Not at all. All right, let's get the obvious and I suppose, straightforward questions out of the way in the first place. What is sudden death syndrome?
Sudden death syndrome is pretty much exactly what it says on the tin. Now, it's an umbrella term, so it encompasses quite a few different diseases or issues. Now, mine is a heart-related issue. It was discovered when I was 18. I was traveling New Zealand and I had a sudden cardiac arrest with no symptoms or anything prior. So, and I was in very good shape at the time. So it was a total surprise. And while they haven't figured out exactly what went wrong, they're certain enough to put it under that sudden death syndrome umbrella. So I'm lucky to have an understanding that it does come under that bracket. I'm unlucky to not have a more granular understanding of what my issue is. So when a lot of people have sudden death syndrome, they do get a more granular understanding and are able to treat their issues very accurately, if not fully kind of solve them.
Okay. So in describing that, you've also just certainly given me a little insight into your character and how you look on life. You're happy not to have the full granular understanding. Now, I think a lot of people in your situation would want to know every jot, tittle, nook and cranny and bolt and join of that situation. Why not you?
I think you're going to have a few of my family members laughing at how that trait manifests itself in other areas. I mean, look, I've got an extreme a treatment in place as possible. I have a pacemaker and defibrillator in place. Through the years, I've kind of learned a few of my parameters the hard way, particularly around exercise and going out and this sort of stuff. And so I live a really full life and I know where my parameters are. At least I have a really good idea. Getting into the details of it doesn't seem all that necessary to me. The only thing that interests me is to what extent it might be hereditary and to what extent I might pass on. But for me and my life, it actually doesn't really get in the way. I had to turn left a little bit and move out of sport and move out of contact sport in particular. But other than that, it's been nothing but a blessing, to be honest.
Well, it tells me, as I said, a couple of things about you. First and foremost, the possibility that maybe your overall outlook and philosophy on life is one of pragmatism and fatalism. You know, there's no point in stressing what I can't control. And if the doo-doo hits the fan, it will, and then I'll deal with it then. And it also strikes me that you're not a control freak about your own life.
The first part you definitely got right. The second part, and I know you've got my dad laughing somewhere at that statement. The second part is you're mildly right. I don't feel like a control freak. However, I do want to control how much of my life I can kind of go out and enjoy. And I kind of am foot to the floor all the time in trying to make the most of it on a few different fronts. But yeah, you're right. There's no control freak here. Yeah. If the bigger picture is fine, I don't tend to sweat it.
Okay. Now, let's talk about living with a death sentence. I mean, you're a published author, and the book, interestingly, is titled "Death: My Guidance Counselor," and that would indicate that what happened to you and the realizations you came to as a result of that had completely changed your outlook on life or cemented what you already felt about life?
Changed for sure. I would have been very narrow-minded before. And I don't beat myself up over that. I was 18, but I wanted to play professional sport. There was literally nothing else on earth I was interested in. And then once that got ruled out, which is very hard at the time, you just got forced to look at loads of different things. And I've literally tried nearly every sport under the sun at this stage, trying to either do it competitively or just for the crack. And I've honestly had such a good time with it. So it's definitely changed my outlook, I would say, dramatically. And it you mentioned the idea of living with that this idea of fatalism. I can't imagine any other way to live anymore. It's embellished my life so much in a lot of different ways.
The reason I'm pursuing this line is that, just to give you a little personal information about me, I mean, the single biggest, most important events in my life were the birth of my children, four of them, and the death of my first wife. And that brush with death completely changed my outlook on life, completely changed my priorities about what was important in life. And I would not have been a fatalist or a pragmatist prior to that, but I became one since. So the effect of what happened to you and how you now live your life and the direction it has pointed you in, or the paths it has made you go down. Talk to me about that.
Firstly, my heartfelt condolences on your wife. It's always much harder for the family, I think. The direction that it has sent me down. So it sent me away from sport, and I was so engaged with sport that I needed that engagement. I'm quite an intense individual, and I like to engage with things on a deep level. So I needed to find something to engage with on a deep level. That caused me to go down a path of trying a ton of different things, and that's probably where the career guidance stuff came in earliest, because a lot of people are out there really confused, trying loads of things, trying their hands and failing a lot and not feeling very good at it. I kind of relished in that experimental time, trying a load of different sports, and got really into writing as well. So it's very much sent me down that path, looking in, rather than kind of looking for the answers outside in the world, looking more inside myself, and looking in a lot to maybe Eastern philosophy and this sort of stuff has been very interesting for me. I would never have done that had I not had the cardiac arrest to begin with. And then the second major path it sent me down is towards just helping young people. Everyone has career confusion when they're young. I was lucky enough to have extreme career confusion with the sudden death stuff, wondering if I was even going to live to 30. And that combination led me to ask questions that most people either never get to ask or don't get to ask until much later in life. So they're probably the two main paths that sent me down that I otherwise would not have gone down.
Okay. For those of you who've just tuned in, it's News Talk, Mark Hagney. I'm talking to a man by the name of Mark Maxwell, who lives with sudden death syndrome, has a very successful career in IT, but his passion is counselling, and he is a guidance counsellor, and he's just been explaining to us how what happened to him led him down that path and to help young people. Now, you are... And I suppose, you know, guidance counselling was a bit of a joke when I was in school. I really apologise. But people who have no involvement with it might smile a bit when they hear the words passion about guidance counselling. But what you're actually trying to do is help put people on the right life path. That makes it very, very important. Now, you're passionate about it because, A, you want to do it, you want to help people, and I'm sure it's very rewarding for you. But you're also angry about it because you feel that the current generation are not well served in that regard.
Totally. And just, it's funny you say that it's not many people's dreams. I used to work in an investment bank that was nicknamed the Millionaire Factory. And when we were out having drinks, they'd say, where do you want to go? And I'd say, I want to be a guidance counselor. So it was pretty funny back then. But the problem I'm trying to solve is this. There's probably three elements to it. One, the guidance counselors out there in school, and I really don't want to, don't mean any disrespect to them. A lot of them are doing terrific jobs. I can just speak from the experience of myself and a lot of friends that I've had. They are academic guidance counselors. They are career guidance counselors. They've been in those schools for years. They haven't actually been out in the working world. Now, that's an issue for two reasons. One, they don't have their own direct experience of say, the business world, which is what I'm interested in. And two, the business world and the working world has evolved dramatically throughout the course of their guidance counselor career. So say if you've got a pretty elderly guidance counselor who's about 70 or 80 years old. When that person was a grad, the most prestigious place to work in Ireland might have been the post office. Mm. Whereas now, 60 years on, the prestigious place to work in Ireland might be Google or Facebook or one of these major tech companies. That guidance counselor isn't in a position to A, empathize, or B, inform that student as to what the correct steps are into that prestigious career. So that's the disconnect that I'm really trying to address. That's one. The second then, and I will soon be subject to this myself, unfortunately, is basically a generational language barrier. If I say something as a 50-year-old to a 20-year-old, the exact words, they might not resonate simply because they're coming from a 50-year-old. If a 28-year-old says the exact same words to that 20-year-old, they might sink in a lot better. Yeah. A, they might say it in a better way, or B, just the fact that the person is younger and kind of primally gains more empathy, it sinks in better. That's something I notice a lot. So that's probably the second dimension to it.
Mark, even as a parent, I've got a 28, a 22, an 18 and a 16-year-old, and we all speak English, but it may as well be two separate languages. I speak ye olde English. They speak digital native English. Finally, because we're up against time, and it's amazing how quickly this has gone. We know that the guidance counsellors and career guidance in schools have not been well served by the department. They've been stripped of funding, and in fact they were taken out of the system at one stage and then shoved back in. But it isn't just about preparing them academically for a career, because a career is just part of a life. So when we're preparing students for the post-school life, we're preparing them for life. In terms of guidance counselling, how do we do that? Do we do it at all? Or are we falling down really badly in that regard?
To be honest with you, I think we're falling down really, really badly. I'll go back to this kind of disconnect thing. 2,000 years ago, when someone was setting out on their career at the age of 16 or 18, the job was to hunt deer or whatever, hunt something, kill it, and stay alive. Nowadays, people want a whole lot more from their careers. They want spiritual fulfillment. They want to travel. They want to make money. They want literally 7 or 8 different things. And so I think we still are serving the people who are just looking to go out and make a living and keep their head above water. We're ignoring the 6 or 7 other facets of a career. Now, I really see a career as being separate to the money you make in it. A career is a spiritual and personal development course. And so I think we definitely need to look at that. We need to look at students' values. We need to look at students' ambitions outside of work. And definitely the spiritual and personal development side of it as well. That's the most important aspect of a career, I would say.
Well, you know, the minute you mention the word spiritual, people will immediately conflate it with religion. And I remember David Bowie's quote about the difference between being religious and spiritual is, being religious is you believe in the idea of hell. Being spiritual means you've been there. And we don't prepare our kids and the future generations for what life is like, and life can be hell. It is difficult, you know. The old thing of that life is a bitch and then you die. In a lot of cases, it is a struggle and will be a struggle. And if you're not armed properly with both the academic tools and also the inner psychological tools, you are going to struggle badly.
Yeah, exactly. The lens, the kind of lens at which or through which I look at spiritual and my little definition of it for the purpose of career guidance is probably just limiting it to a person's relationship with their own self. Because that's when they're in the bank job that they hate, like I was, or they're in a faraway country alone, et cetera, like I was, all these different things, when they've got a health issue, whatever it might be, it's their relationship with themselves that is going to define whether or not they come out of that for better or for worse. And so I try to really focus on that. I really try to get these people to start thinking, A, thinking independently and thinking for themselves, and B, respecting their own opinion and forming a really positive relationship with themselves, so that when they are stuck in that corner alone, they have a relationship with themselves that is strong enough to take them out of it.
Okay, Mark Maxwell, thank you so much. I could talk to you for hours. For those of you listening who want to get more information about this, follow the path a bit more, maybe the best thing for you to do is get Mark's book. It's called Death, My Guidance Counsellor. Thank you very much, sir. Okay, up next, it's Gavin McLaughlin with Business News.